You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz. Tony Duchesne here, and welcome to Drinks with Tony. One quick announcement. My screenwriting workshop starts on December 22nd, and materials go out to students on December 19th for everyone registering, and that's coming up quick. So register for the two-week workshop over the holiday break, and you can find the link at drinkswithtony.com. The link to register is at drinkswithtony.com for the accelerated two-week screenwriting workshop during the holiday break. And now, what you're really here for is to listen to a couple of writers talk about writing.
Hi, it's Andrew Rubin, and you're listening to Drinks with Tony.
Get on the Drinks with Tony show, yeah.
You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Andrew Rubin. He's the author of Hell or High Winter. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Sunny, our warm, yeah.
Our summer.
Look at how great we're doing. We're still, yeah.
Brimstone's hot. What's the cold thing that comes down from the gods when they're angry with you when it just blizzards in the East Coast? What is that? I guess
the
snow.
Polar vortex.
There you go. I like the sound of that. The polar vortex on the East Coast, and we're sitting here going, I wonder if I should wear a hoodie today or if I should, just in case when it gets dark.
I know, I'm going to go swimming later.
Oh, are you? Do you go swimming in the ocean or do you have a pool?
Oh, God, no. Not in the ocean out off of L.A. It's, like, too polluted.
Is it over to L.A.?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would assume so.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. The thing about Los Angeles, because I feel like I'm an expat in Los Angeles because I'm from San Francisco. So like I haven't gone to the beach that much because I live east side, and I feel like I'm missing out on this whole different culture of Los Angeles.
The West Side is its own city. It's its own culture, its own everything. We don't leave the West Side. Everybody we know lives east of the 405, and I call it the Great Wall of Los Angeles because you can't get past it.
And I didn't understand that either. It's like if you fall in love with somebody and you're on the wrong side of the 405, it's a long distance relationship or a breakup instantly.
I was just about to say that if you're dating someone in like Studio City or, I don't know how. Yeah, it's you might as well be dating them in Arizona. It's a commitment.
It'd be easier to date them in Arizona. It's just like you're the love of my life. You're the best thing that's happened to me. But you live in Sawtell. I can't go there all the time.
you want me to drive to Burbank? True love doesn't take you that far. So.
But the metro's not doing so bad. Like, I mean, it might be great by the time I'm dead, but at the same time, it's looking up.
I mean, what metro? They're stopping at the VA center, and I'd have to take a car to the metro, and that's the most of the traffic is to get to where they're gonna stop the.
So that here's what I did, because I'm a great idiot. I was like, I moved right by the red line. I called it the red line. Now it's a letter now, and so that's how long I've been here. I'm like using old timey terms from a decade ago, but I moved here so I wouldn't have to have a car, because I thought I could deal with LA without a car, and boy was I wrong. So I'm like, well, if you want to go to downtown, that works.
Yeah.
Then there you go.
LA, I feel like it's designed by a 2-year-old with a crayon. And then the public transportation, it's amazing. They designed it so that you would have to drive a car to take the public transportation. And then it doesn't take you where you actually want to be.
Right.
So,
a 2-year-old with a crayon.
The one time I took the Expo line, there was two fights that broke out from homeless people on the train. And that was, and I was taking a date downtown. We were going to go to the market, whatever the central Grand Central Market or whatever it is downtown.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we were like, it just opened the line and we like thought that would be a great idea, right? Public transportation to downtown Los Angeles. It shows my skills. Yeah, that was not a good idea. And that was the last time I took it.
The thing about like LA versus like New York subway, it's just like when someone's peeing on your foot in LA, no one knows what to do. When someone's peeing on your foot in
It's
New
just
York,
too safe.
Somebody gets a kick in the balls, and it's like there's a maneuvering that happens. But over the years, like 10 years ago, the person would just beat the crap out of the person. Now you can't do that because everyone videotapes you, and then you're in court and you're on the hook for 20 grand because you just wanted to beat someone up who was peeing on your shoe, you know? It's
just like... Well, in New York, it was part of the ambiance. You had rats, and
right.
You had someone, you had like Yo-Yo Ma secretly playing the cello on the platform. So, I mean,
yes.
It was all that, yeah. So
that's the thing about New York. That's the you just hit on it right there. It's the it's bringing all the social classes together. So someone can be going to a high end restaurant dressed to the nines, and then someone else is going to a punk show, and you're sitting there smashed up next to each other to get to the same stop and do live in completely different social circles. If you swapped those people and the high class person went to the punk show and the grungy person went to the restaurant, it would be chaos on earth. But put them together on a subway and it's normal.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I love Manhattan. I was there the last days of CBGB and all that stuff
no
when
way.
New York was, yeah.
Oh, you live there?
That's where I went to school. So I went to NYU
wow.
for a couple of years and oh, I loved it. I would be back there in a heartbeat. And here I am sounding like the SNL sketch of Los Angeles and we're talking about shooting down freeways and
yeah.
Complaining.
So do you take the 10 or the 110? No, I'm kidding.
No. I almost took that as a serious question and started.
I know.
It's very
it's serious down here. I didn't know that myself. I saw the Californian sketch and I thought it was funny, but then you get to LA and you're like, oh my God, no, that's serious.
Oh,
like
you, that's when that's you, how you say hello. You tell people
yeah.
how you got there. So
yes. Oh my, why are you taking the 405 at 4 o'clock? I mean, like that tells you what kind of person this person is, and you can't be friends with them.
Yeah. You didn't get off on the 90 and then go Lincoln. Like you're obviously stupid.
Yeah. And if you're that dumb, your emotional IQ is really bad. You're probably I can't talk to you.
I don't know how I got this way. It scares me because I resisted Los Angeles for a very, very, very long time. So,
yes. How long have you lived here?
Oh God. I kind of lost count. It was sort of fuzzy because I did a lot of couch surfing for many years. So
yeah.
Like I would say since 2011, 2012.
Oh, we're kind
I'm really
of close.
Bad with that. Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of close as to how we're dealing with LA. I'm 2013.
Yeah.
So.
But always the West Side and like one stint near Little Ethiopia. But that was again
oh, okay.
couch surfing. So.
Yeah. And that's closer to where I'm at.
Yeah.
Because
no,
I'm right between Los Feliz and Koreatown. So like to get
oh,
to
okay.
like to get over to get to like I was just at a show at the old it was the Bootleg Theater, but now it's called 2220 Arts Center, and that's in historic Filipino town. Which if you don't stop, if you're like looking at the road and you don't stop at a stoplight, you wouldn't even know. And then and I was like, oh my God, I parked and I'm like, I didn't know this was historic Filipino town. So I took a photo of the big graffiti on the wall that said historic Filipino town. And I'm like, this is amazing. And I didn't see one Filipino. I was like, well, this is LA. It's all a sham.
Well, it's like DC, their Chinatown. They literally like manufactured it and they put up the fake lanterns and like they just decided we're going to have a Chinatown now.
Interesting.
That was the one time I went there a long time ago. Someone was taking me on a tour and was like.
And all they have is Panda Express. I don't even think that's Chinese. It's so bad. Oh, we'll call the show Cancel Tony after this. But so how long were you in New York?
Only 3 years, but my family was all from there, so I'd grow up going back every year.
Yeah.
And, doing the Metro North and all that stuff. So it feels like it's a part of my blood. Whether I know anybody that really lived there, would be like 3 years was nothing. So,
Well, I see. I adore New York, and I've probably only accumulated maybe 3 months out of my whole life. But when I go there, it's
you
like
do
I
it. You
know.
just
I yeah.
embrace it.
I'm the guy that goes to JFK and takes the commuter train into Grand Central, and then I'm on this. And at first, it like scared me to death, and I would get on the wrong train, and I would like talk to people, and I'd be rattled with my bags. But I love that at the end of that, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just taking the six to Columbus Circle, and then I got to get over to, and then I feel like, oh wait, I'm now a part of this town. Like wherever I'm at, like even LA, we're talking freeways.
Yeah.
People who aren't from here, they're like, oh, that's kind of funny because I heard things, but it's just like to physically be able to do it within a city, and do the like kind of do the hard stuff and say, yeah, oh, I'm gonna get a cab straight from the airport to my hotel. No, don't do that. Do it the hard way. That's the fun way.
Yeah,
Plus,
take the
I
train
can't
out to
afford
Cone.
cabs.
Not anymore.
Yeah,
that's for me at least. No, I had the best. I was like my last year in New York. I had the quintessential tiny hole in the wall New York brownstone apartment in the Village, right off of Washington Square
Oh,
Park.
man.
It was like the subdivided. The people that would live there were rent controlled forever with the shared bathrooms on the hallway.
Yeah.
You open the front door, it blocked our kitchen. It was a hot plate and a mini fridge. And the
Yes.
TV was in the fireplace. And the one bedroom was too small to actually have a bed in it. So it was, and I shared it with somebody. And it was our two desks with our, when we wanted to work, we had our clothes hanging. So you had to push the clothes, like open them, the curtain of clothing, to actually sit at the desk and you work. It was great. I loved it. I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And it would leak, you know, the rain on the summer would pour in through the roof and you could
Oh,
hear
wow.
the girls upstairs. There was a famous artist living who'd been there since the 70s upstairs from us. It was amazing. So,
And what a perfect spot, too.
yes, the
I
energy
mean,
of New York is just, even if you're in a hole in the wall, there's something magical about it.
yeah. I was just listening to the Patti Smith just did an interview with some guy at the New York Times on the New York Times podcast, which I hate. Like, I hate the way they talk because it's just so, it's just like, so I want to be gentle with you the way I talk to you. And I'm just like, can you, and you know, I can almost, Patti Smith is just an, I feel like she's just an amazing woman on so many levels. And there's a couple times you can kind of tell she's a little bit, and but it's so well edited that it seems they try to make the host sound great, which is why I don't edit my show, because I'm like, one, I don't have the time to edit. We're live and and it's just live recording. We're not live now, don't worry. I saw the look in your eyes.
I was like,
But two, it's just like I don't want to sound like I tried to make myself smart and you came with the like exact, there's always an angle when there's an edit, and that's why. One of
Well,
the
I did
reasons
bring my
why,
own microphone. So.
Well, no, I mean, you sound great. You look great. Everything's really working out. Like it's, you know.
Thank you. But I don't have, the New York Times does have that like beautiful recording studio that's like Abbey Road, where it's just, it's all that's the sound cushioning on the walls and the multiple microphones coming out of the middle of the desk. And
And if they offered me a job there as doing a podcast, I'd be there in 1 second, apologize profusely for what I just said. And I would be like, yes, no. So Andrew, how did you make it in that one small bedroom with so many people? And what's the housing crisis like now?
That's the perfect like AI podcaster tone.
Press 9 for yes. Press 0 for no. And then it comes up with your rote answer that like is like so correct. Well, the housing crisis, if we go back to Robert Moses.
I'm such a nerd. I just spent yesterday at a holiday party talking about the housing crisis. So
Well, you gotta, and that's the thing. I was at a wedding reception last night, which was so much fun. A friend of mine, 73 years old, he's been dating his now wife since 1997, and I'm just, and for some odd reason, I'm like, I'm a divorced guy, but I'm like, I would get married again if it was the right person. I would just like go all in and give her half immediately. You know, it's just like, here's half. And, and I already got my sleeping bag for when I got a couch surf, and it's marriage's beautiful, but I'm ready. I'm ready for the end. But yeah, he's 73 and has a beautiful wife, and I'm just like, this is so cool. It was just fun.
I love the way you put it. I'm ready for the end. I feel that very, very acutely. Dating in Los Angeles is the worst thing in
Oh my
the
dude, it's terrible. Oh man, I'm just about to get off of online dating again because women are insane. Women, I'm sorry, you're insane collectively. I know there's a few good ones out there, but like one woman's, oh, you just hit a nerve, baby.
Oh, I'm like afraid. I'm like thinking, oh no, I opened a box, I think.
You opened it. I'll give you one example. One woman, her bio just said, "Tell me what abortion rights organizations you donate to before you message me." And I'm just like,
Oh.
"That's your bio." And then I was just like, "Oh, but you live in on my side of the 405? I think I love you."
I know that's happening to me right now. I have someone, and all she will tech message me back is about French fries. And I'm like trying to ask her questions. What are the best French fries on the West Side? And I'm like,
No, this
well,
goes
you're Beverly Hills, so maybe this I can make this work,
right. Exactly.
like,
Beverly Hills, you can make work at certain times of day. There are people who, this is freaking me out a lot because there are women who put like a photo from when they're like 8 years old or something on there that just like happens to be in there. And I'm like, if I came up to you, this is the olden days when we would go out to places and actually talk to a woman we might be interested in and we want to explore. And, and if we're exploring, this is a person I want to see who I may become intimate with on various levels. And if she pulled out her wallet and said, "Look at me when I was 8 years old," I would be running to the bus. I'd be tearing out of that bar, running to the bus, going, "Oh my God, what just happened?" Because that's so weird. That's too strange. Now, I don't know. It might not be strange, me, because you're looking at me like I'm crazy, and I could be wrong there. So,
No, I just have 1,001 stories going in my mind right now, too.
oh, you're like, how can I beat that? How can I
So,
beat that? I love
I mean, I
that. You're
got a
just,
lot.
I like, I was
I mean,
watching the brain spark.
that's how I'm starting my second book. Is the a different
Really?
kind? Yes, actually, dating in Los Angeles from a
Yeah.
Greek god's perspective.
Oh my
So.
God. I'm so in. I'm
I was like,
already.
well, the first book takes place in hell, so like maybe like a different hell, which is dating in Los Angeles would be the right place to start.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's time or if it's location as well, because San Francisco felt like a very different place to date. But also, they accept
It's more
things to.
politically charged. And yes, it's a lot more open, but it's
Oh, yeah,
also
I
it
think the
vibrates
politically charged,
differently.
yeah, and that's of our era at the same time where it's just like, how many marches did you go to this year? And I'm like, zero. I don't go to marches. And then they have, like, throw down and have an epileptic fit. I'm like, when you're lost and you're like trying to swim up the toilet bowl.
But then dating in Los Angeles, I was literally once asked on our first date, what's my credit score? So,
No way. What is your
yeah.
credit score, by the way?
Slowly climbing.
Dude, I check mine like once a month as well. It's just I'm going, not that I'm trying to get any loans. I just want to be good to Experian and FICO.
The whole thing just drives me nuts because like you make one error once, like, oh, I paid my bill like 2 days late, and then they're like they knock you down, and then it takes like 20 years to get back to a fraction of what you have, and I'm like, who are you to decide that that's absolutely unforgivable versus everything else? So.
I've seen credit scores on dating profiles, and it's just I'm
Oh
like
wow, you've seen it on the
on
profile.
the profile, my
Wow.
credits or the other one, which cracks me up, which is I'm financially a solvent, and you should be too. And I think solvent means like rich, or does that just mean getting
Yes.
by?
I think solvent is liquid. You have cap, I think. You have
Yeah,
money.
I mean, I got capital, but at the same time, no. That's
Well,
the
who
first thing
really
you
does in
look
Los
for in
Angeles?
love. Yeah. Or the craziest one is when they're like in front of like all the first photo is them in front of a fancy car, and I'm like, you already showed me how much you're gonna cost.
Fancy car.
You just showed my FICO score going down.
Or a very fancy spa, or I've seen on a
Right.
boat,
Oh yeah.
or yeah.
Cruise ships. Cruise ships are the worst. Cruise ships is a zero tolerance. It's just like, oh my God, I love travel. Like I did a cruise ship in the Caribbean. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's not travel. That's like going to Disneyland with
I really
wheelchairs.
don't, and I really don't understand the bathroom selfie. That never computes. Like, what part of me seeing a toilet behind you
I
is
know.
sexy?
Yeah.
It doesn't. I don't know. Maybe for some people, but
Yeah.
I'm
The
like,
other
even if
thing,
it's.
and this will probably stop the whole conversation. Boobs hanging out, man. First photo, it's just like, yeah, I'm gonna look when we meet, but I don't want to like have like zero, like, oh wow, I saw a little bit of the, what do they call the not the nipple, but the thing around it. It's, I can't think of it right now. But it's just like, I'm like, wow, that's like hot. No. If you're presenting that to the whole world, then no.
My other kind of quick pass is the Mickey Mouse ears. I
Oh
get
my God,
yes.
yeah.
There's so many Disney photos. I'm
Yeah.
like I if I it's that's not I haven't been since middle school field trip. It's not
Yeah.
it's not it's you know
I know
it doesn't
exactly.
do again.
I
It's
don't, if you,
bathrooms.
yeah, I'm looking for
It's
my
a
plus
cruise.
one for my Disney pass, and I'm like,
Yeah.
and I'm not. I haven't been to Disney since like 1986, I think was the last time I was there. The big thing was Michael Jackson's new like 3D experience of a video that we got to watch for 16 minutes. And it's probably three times the size it was in 86. I have zero interest in Disney. What are you, five? Put your photo up there, the 5-year-old too. Show me your
There are
kid.
those. I've seen a lot of that. Like when you're little. I mean, I don't know what it's like for the other side. Obviously, I have a friend. We exchange profiles. She sends me
Yes.
the horrendous ones from her side, and I don't
Yes.
want to speak out of turn and talk about the things the date she's been on. So I do not think it's any easier for women, but it
I
certainly it
agree.
is. But there's this idea that it's somehow for guys, it's whatever, and who cares? There was this
Yeah.
recent movie, The Materialist, and I was like, it is so one-sided, as if just the men are shallow. Well, it showed that as on the female perspective as well, but it drives me nuts that somehow our experience doesn't count for anything, that it's not hard for us. It's just purely difficult. I mean, it's hard for everyone, as
Yeah.
what I, yeah.
And I found it. I don't know where I found this study, but there was a study, and I sent it to a lady friend of mine because I'm exchanging information too. I'm like, what's going on in your end? What's going on in your end? So, you got to do that. And from the different parts of the dating pools, and she was, what were we just talking about? It just got out of my mind.
Mickey Mouse dating apps.
Mickey Mouse dating apps. We were exchanging information. Your friend just.
Oh, the female side not being any easier than the.
Right. Oh, and the study was that men are more affected romantically when it comes to romantic relationships. Like it takes longer for them to get over, and it's it, there there it's
Wow.
that there's a complexity to how men are intimate, and the assumption that everyone's just trying to get in your pants is just like, well, one, that's born into us, so we got no control over that. At the same time, we've learned to control it, and we want something deeper. And it fascinates me. Years ago, when I first came to LA, I went on a date with someone, and we actually went on three dates. And then I found out that she was a webcam model, and I was like, all right, well.
That's very Los Angeles.
I was just like, wow, okay. But I made my move on her, and she goes, oh, I thought you were asexual. And I was like, What? I waited 3 dates because I wanted to make sure that this was. I'm the weirdo that waits 3 dates because I don't want to get myself too involved because I know in my mind and in my heart, if I physically involve too quickly, then I'll become hung up. So I need to kind of, and I think there's a little woman inside of me just saying, "Yes, Tony, I know we do," but it just that's kind of how my rhythm works. But to just assume that I was asexual, it was just like, no, it's there's guy, there's like a billion guys like me. You're going out with the wrong guys.
Yeah. Part of me is worried that this whole discussion is like an act of self-immolation in my dating life. Like I go
Well,
on a radio show
I
to talk,
know.
and I'm like, oh God, help me. I'm so
Well,
self-destructive.
what it is, it's just I think I'm always just trying to find the truth and the truth of civilization. And I mean, there's
Yeah.
what do we do as
It's
humans? And I love that's why I love talking to writers. What do we do as humans in general? Well, we kind of just eat. We look for
Procreate.
love, and we sit on toilets for much too much of our lives.
Especially now
With
with phones.
yeah, exactly for getting rid of the things that we ate. It's so primitive. We're like, we gloss up what is utterly primitive. We're just primitive.
Well, I find it so fascinating that we outsource probably one of the most important aspects and components of our lives, like finding a mate, finding a partner. And we've outsourced it to an algorithm that actually does not care about finding us,
Right.
our soulmate. It cares about taking our data and making money for the people that own it.
Yeah.
And so I mean, I'm endlessly interested in all of the comp how, I mean, I'm living it, how much technology has disrupted and the idea that it's just ruined dating for people, that they need to take breaks. I was literally just talking about this last night, about the idea that people have to take breaks from dating. You know, we did this thing for 10,000 years, and now the last 20, it's unlike anything anyone's ever done in humanity before.
Yeah.
Just ones and zeros throwing us together with complete strangers that we would have never met in another lifetime.
Yeah.
Oh.
That it's the human experience is it's complicated, yet it's so simple that it's like it's how did you vote? When they asked that question right away, and I'm like, I try to keep Trump out of my life, and you obviously are bringing Trump into your life with your massive hatred toward him. I don't have hate because that would take up room. Take up room in my soul. That's a show. That's a show over there.
I wish I could get there, but I'm working on
Well,
it.
I say that like I've gotten there, and it's a tug of war, but I keep trying to get there. And I think getting there for me, which we'll get back to books at this moment, getting there for me is reading novels. Reading novels like Hell or High Winter by Andrew Rubin.
Was
But
a
it's,
beautiful
did you
segue.
like
Thank you.
that? Did you like
Yeah,
that?
that was
It,
great.
that's almost, I think that's better than a credit score.
Sorry to, and I interrupted it, but I just have to
Well,
say
no,
that that
we're
was.
noticing it because we're writers. You're supposed to notice things, and I'm glad you noticed it and like called it out and went, "Wow, that was good."
It was this started with political angst and this thing we're all suffering from, and then you escaped to books, and then the book
Yeah,
is mine. So,
it is, and it's your first book.
yes,
Wait, now,
first,
when did it
hopefully not
come
the
out?
last.
Did it just come out? Because I forgot to check the release date. I know we were
Yeah.
taping right now.
Yeah, no, it just came out in October. So,
Okay.
yeah, but it was like almost 15, 10, 15 years to get here at minimum.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it feels like this weird thing that, like, oh, you just wrote a book, but no, it's been a
No,
very
exactly.
long time to get to this point.
Do you feel like if you knew how long it would take that you would have you would have done the work? Anyway, like if you knew when you first started from the idea that it would take that many years, would you have felt like it was too much?
Oh, I probably would have done it. I still would have done it.
Ooh,
I because I
yeah.
love I mean, I love the writing of it. That's the most fun part. The writing of it took me like a year and a half, almost 2 years, the initial writing. And then I put it on a shelf, digital shelf, for like 7 years because I had imposter syndrome. And I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I gave it to one person and I asked them, like, oh, what do you think? Granted, not the wonderful person, not the best first reader because it was not his drawing. And he's like, ah, I cut 90 out of the 100 pages. And that kind of crushed me for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so then I didn't do anything with it for a long time. But no, if the writing itself wasn't fun, then yeah, then I wouldn't. Then what's the point? But yeah, I think, you know, to write is to write and then struggle everywhere and getting it out to the world. So.
Well, and that's the thing. The process is what's, I think, the right to maintain a sane brain in the writing game. It's about the adoring the process. And it took me a while to learn that, too. Like, it's the imposter syndrome is huge. I'm querying my second novel right now. It'll be my second published novel. There's been, but I'm querying that. And I'm just like going, you know, little, you don't need to read this, but if you do, that'd be great. But, you know, you don't have to. Yes, just, I don't want to waste your time.
The querying and the marketing is just, it's so antithetical to, it's just like you, all you want to do is just be in front of your computer and just do this thing.
Yes.
And then there's this self-promotion and then there's this constant like begging people to pay attention to you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 3 months later, they haven't responded and you're like, hey, just checking in and, you know, I exist. So you took
the 7 years off. Then what brought you? Well, were you still writing during that 7 years, or would like just in general?
I was writing in screenplays. That's where I started, and I still did that. So like the whole time, you know. And then I have a business, mental health education. So all that stuff's going on in between.
Cool. Okay.
And then, but yeah, I Marianne Maloney, this amazing woman. She helped. She was my first manager, producer, all this stuff. And I saw she was helping some authors get their books published. And I was like, now's my shot. And so I rewrote it, spent like a year plus rewriting it. I gave it to her. She already knew the story had history and we worked on it together. And then, you know, with her help, we took it out. And so here I am. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
When, and you're on Rare Bird. So when did you hear that you got the Rare Bird acceptance?
Oh, we did the submission and then I was waiting and waiting and they said yes. And I was like, it was a dream come true.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you celebrate that day?
No, I've learned from screenwriting never to celebrate until the thing is actually out. I can't. I have so many unopened bottles of things that I thought, Yeah. It's just too painful to have too many things that you think is going and then it be yanked away.
Yeah.
So like when I actually held the book for the first time in my hands in October, I was like, oh, okay, now I can celebrate. Like I can.
Exactly.
I can sit down.
Isn't
and
it
have
insane?
A burger and a glass of,
Isn't it insane to just have a book out there? Like it's, cause it, part of it's vulnerable and part of it's like, of course it's out there. It should be out there and everyone should read it. And I don't understand why, you know, but at the same time, the other part is like, oh, but they're reading it and they can find that one thing that I just wish I changed.
Oh, that's every page. And then, but it's very surreal because I have people like when you go to a signing and you're signing a books or whatever, and they're actually holding something that's complete and finished. And that's an experience I have never had. You know, I've done like a documentary and all that stuff, but writing's been my passion. And if on the screenplay side, it's been, you know, you just write for it to seem like it's going to take off and then the plane just crashes and then, or it never gets down the runway. And it's just, so to actually like hold a physical thing in your hand and to feel like someone can pick it up off a shelf, and review it, like having reviews of something.
You're reading the reviews. Have you gotten any bad ones?
Actually, no. They've been really positive,
oh my
which
God.
Has been really nice. Yeah, no.
I
I'm
shouldn't
like,
even
if I
have
would...
said that out loud.
Great.
I
now
am
it's like
so sorry.
Here they come. So...
this guy and his dating wife. I'm not even picking up his book. One star.
The idea that someone, because when I have everything else I've ever worked on, critique came in the form of notes, so it's like, great, okay, but here's how you need to change it.
Yeah.
So like to have someone read a book and then they it's a finished work. It's like having a painting
Yeah.
on a wall in a gallery. You know, no one's going to say it needed more yellow. They're
yeah.
just going to tell you how they feel. And it's not having people interact with something that's not through the lens of what you need to improve or change. And I'm sure there's probably many things. Probably a lot of people are going like that, that they would, you know, I am very opinionated. So
Yeah.
whenever I read other people's things, but
Well,
if
even
you can
Homer's
just,
still pissed off about the Iliad. He's just like, oh, if
yes.
I would have just, that close.
Yes, I have characters that have beefs with him in the book too. So,
yeah, because I want to ask you about that in a second. But as we were still talking about like just the writing process, oh yes, I think the idea of being a screenplay and understanding how screenplays work as well as a novelist is such a great two. It's like having an uppercut and a knockout. There's because I teach screenwriting at UCLA Extension and I've done some screenwriting, and it's like to be in both has really in like I this in novel writing novels has informed my screenwriting, and screenwriting has informed my novels. They like inform each other. There's it you, it's people who think it's like a I don't know if there's any people who think it's like a cop-out thing to be a screenwriter and a novelist, but I think it's really
No.
important because storytelling is storytelling. That's it.
I think it's a superpower. I mean, I am so grateful I started out from a screenwriting background. One, because you learn how to take notes. The entire thing is critique. So then to go into novel writing where everybody's goal is just to help tell your story, and there's this, I don't know, there's like a vaulted place that authors have that screenwriters are just, you're a fire hydrant that everyone's peeing on you all the time.
Yes.
And so that's really refreshing. But then I feel like the screenwriting superpower is plotting and structure. Like
Yeah.
you have to have a clear three acts or five acts if you're doing TV. You have to have a cohesive story that works beginning, middle, and end. And I've read so many books, and I've adapted a couple books, which is a really fun process in screenwriting. And then when you're breaking them apart, and I have reverse engineered them is my process. I literally take the book and I write the outline version of it as if I'm the author going backwards through every chapter.
Wow.
And you just realize there's so much plot holes that, you know, beautifully written, wonderful books. But then if you're looking at it from a structural point of view, it just drifts because someone was just kind of following things and meandering. And then it just wraps up because the story needs to end. And
Right.
sometimes it's a little cliche or, you know, overly dramatic and sort of deus ex machina-esque. And screenplays can do that too, of course. But like, and that's also where screenplays are so frustrating. You know, I've been in meetings where they're like, you know, your inciting incident happened on page 17 and it really should be page 15.
Yeah.
And you're like,
Is it
okay, we're
page
not.
15 these days? Because, like, well, on the script, it's on page 15, but like a lot of times, and I don't know, I like a lot of the films I show, I make my students break down. I make them break down like Little Miss Sunshine. And
Oh,
I
that's
mean,
a great one for it.
yeah, inciting incident is like what? Fourth minute. Olive's going to the beauty pageant, you know, but then we got to get Richard to the, to his, what do you call it?
I feel like everyone's fine if the inciting incident is earlier. It's if it's later, you get so much flack from everyone.
Yeah, but
No
minute
one,
12, minute 12 on like Blockbusters. I make my students watch way too many Mark Wahlberg movies. I have something about Mark Wahlberg. Well, I'll watch his movie even if I don't like a movie of his. And I think it's because he has in his contract to take his shirt off. And I'm just like, how are you in your 50s and still have that body? I just want to, I just, and I was just watching, oh man, I just watched this new Mark Wahlberg. And I always, there's this one quiz I have for my students where it's just like, I go through the serious stuff and I'm like, and at what minute does Mark Wahlberg take his shirt off? And it's because he does it in every movie. It's just like, and why not? The guy works out 5 hours a day. And, you know, it's just like, so this one movie, and I got to remember it because I need to tell my students about it because they make fun of me for having this weird obsession. But it was like minute. It was like 90 seconds in, shirt was off. He came out shirt off. And I'm like, oh yeah, that was in contract. Rewrite that part. Cause like we're shooting today and this is my good day.
It's like Tom Cruise is contractually obligated, I think, to get to hang off of at least one moving vehicle or plane. But yeah, and you know that's because he wants to show how he can do it. It's
Well, and Tom Cruise is an insane Scientologist, but Tom Cruise is like the greatest actor and producer going right now. I watch all the Mission Impossible films. He took James Bond genre to a level that catches up and takes us forward in like the mythology of all film.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It's entertaining. It's that's I mean, he did what he's supposed to do. That's what we go to the theater for. I mean,
He's a hard
that was
worker.
and that was F1. I watched that this year and I was like, this is just a good old-fashioned, great, fun, like, yeah, you're rooting for the guy to win this race, and how you know they're gonna do it, they said. But it's like, how are they gonna do it? And that's where you're and then it's just, you want a movie that just is fun sometimes, and they
Well, and I think
delivers that.
the fun movies, I believe, also are really important for the culture and mythology of, there's feel good movies, but sometimes there's feel good movies that kind of have a good message underneath, and you're just and it's not and not that I'm looking for messages or anything, but I feel like from an author's point of view, especially in novels, like I usually don't even know what my message is until 2 years in, and I'm on the fourth draft, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm writing about this. I was trying not to write about that. Really? Come on. What am I, a one-trick pony? Yes.
No, I mean, that's always an interesting part of writing to me. It's, do you start with a theme or do you find the theme in the writing? And it's like, it just depends. Sometimes it's so clear why I'm writing something and what I want to get across. But a lot of the times in the writing, I discover it, and it's just being with the character.
That's the only place I discover it. And the character starts doing things that I didn't necessarily want him to do, but it's going that way. And guess what? I better pay attention to what this character is telling me, or I got this weird like esoteric relationship with my characters that I have to be. I'm like, I got to maintain this like a romantic relationship. It's because it is intimate. If you're 4 hours a day with one character every single day, that's like more intimate than a marriage.
Yeah, I mean, and at this point, I've been writing at least this character for over 10 years. And then when I write a chapter and I've gone away from it for something work-wise, and I get back, and it's almost like I'm rejoining and hanging out with a friend. The voice comes, and it's just you click back into it, and in a way that is, yeah, it is like a marriage with the characters. I mean, with this one in particular, to speak about the Hell or High Winter side of things. I mean, I knew that the fun part of Hermes is he's a trickster and he's a messenger god. And it was always this idea of what's a messenger god going to do in the age of email, and text messages and all that stuff, and this idea of having no purpose. But, it then only when I was sort of really diving in and getting into what that actually meant, that the sort of theme of, oh, it's about like all of us just being as lost and without purpose in this 21st century. And if the gods are suffering, well, part of it is like, what hope do we have if the gods are suffering? But I mean, it was kind of just this great exploration of the sort of angst and the mental health issues that we all deal with, and being able to put it in, it just magnified it with a god. But the idea of like, oh, well, I was having fun writing these scenes, and I was like, oh, but he's just acting out. It's really masking a lot of anger and pain, and like he's got these big feelings, and he's a god, and he's expressing them in horrendously destructive ways. So for as far as themes go, that was an interesting discovery that I found by the end of the book, and then in rewriting it and going into the second one, that I was like, oh, this is a story about a god learning to have faith in himself, and that's what I thought would be fun. And then when I found that, it just everything felt very real. And it became less about them being gods. And it's weird because then you stop actually writing them as gods and they just feel like people. And that's what I enjoyed. Like very early on when I was writing this, I wanted it to be that worship is like a drug. And so they're addicts that don't have their supply anymore, and they're all sort of really coping badly with that. And then for, you know, Hermes, it's this process of learning that, you know, actually the greatest power is having faith in yourself, that you don't need these legions of worshipers to give you validation if you can find that one part of yourself. And I obviously I say that because it's a struggle that I have, and I know we all have it, but
Yeah.
and it feels so magnified now as like you're trying to market a book and you're going out there and you're like, someone please follow me, and I'm doing these postings and I'm doing hashtag
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's so, and it's like I'm doing the thing that my character is raging against. And so it's this very weird funhouse mirror of writing a book about this incredibly personal theme, at least I feel it personally, of learning to have faith in yourself, especially writing, taking 10 years to get a book published.
Yeah.
And then also living in a world where, because it's, you know, Hermes is chasing followers and or worshipers, and I'm chasing followers, and we're all chasing people to pay attention to us, and you know,
Right.
so that's that the theme to me really sort of emerged. And I think it was probably that 10-year process of writing a book and having this culture and the world develop with it.
Yeah.
Because for me, I grew up straddling the age. I knew the before times, and now I know the after times. And it's this very weird self-awareness of it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like having a longer gestation with the theme, with the characters, has really helped in a way. So maybe it was always supposed to take 10 years.
That's the thing. It's because a friend of mine, an author friend of mine, when I was doing rewrites, this book that I started from beginning to end took like 4 years. And it's like 230 pages. And it's just like, but I'm a lean machine. I think part of the lean machine is the screenwriting too. It's just like, get to it, negative space, get to it, negative space. I hope that's what I'm telling myself. But I was just like, oh man, I don't think, you know, like I talked to him. I was like, I don't think I'm gonna get this done by April. Like, and he's like, dude, it's a book. Book has its time. That's it. You don't have control over the time of the book when you're writing a novel. It's just you have to like let it's almost like cooking a casserole or a souffle. It's like when it pops up, it's done, and it might take a while, and it might be fast.
But and when those moments happen, when it suddenly sparks, oh, those are great.
Yeah.
I've learned to trust the moments when I'm stuck, and I'm just like, okay, I'm in the stuck moment. And I'll go take a walk, or I'll go exercise or do something. And it
Yeah.
still sucks if it carries on for a long time. Like you're like, uh-oh, is it ever
Yeah.
gonna end?
Yeah.
But it almost feels like now it's a part of the process. So you're like, oh, okay, I'm in that phase now. So
Yeah.
that's the lunar cycle that we're in. And you know, maybe I just need to go read some more about the this particular subject that I'm incorporating into the chapter. And then, you know, you do, and so you find something that's amazing, and then you're like running back to the computer, and suddenly you're not stuck. So
Yeah. And I think there's more truth in fiction than there is often in nonfiction, when especially like there might be some truth that you have tapped into regarding Hermes and these other gods, where they may be frustrated with this, you know, if they exist as they do, or however it is out there, then in the great unknown that we don't know, but we're trying to understand, that these feelings can actually be true. And you may have tapped on it.
well, I thank you. I mean, I have to say, using them as vehicles to like wrestle with these questions was the most fun. Just having Hermes and Persephone sitting down and like wondering who created us, or like we don't have all the answers. So how does that, you know, make sense? And like, what if the
Yeah.
humans surpass us? And you know, they
Yeah.
seem to know more than we do now. Like, and
Yeah.
what, you know, the idea of like putting those questions in people that we have put on a, like, we've invented all these gods. We created them. The Greeks did
Yeah.
this wonderful thing of making the gods as messy as the humans, or even worse, you know, and wonderfully, masterfully, horrendous ways and funny ways. And so to be able to, we created them, and then to give them the same problems that we have and use them as a vehicle to sort of take their divinity and their immortality. And yeah, it's, I think that separation, it would be so much harder and probably a lot more boring if I was writing about a kid from San Diego who was struggling with technology and wanting followers and then looking at his Instagram page. Like, it's just not that interesting. But
I think that would be interesting. It just how you come at it.
yeah. Well, maybe, and maybe my not feeling like my life is interesting is I always thought, like, I looked out my window growing up and it was a fence for the, a little side yard and a wood fence. So I always think, like, okay, well, I didn't look out and I didn't have this like grand view outside my window. And so it's just, it's, that life isn't worthy of novels, but maybe Hermes descending into hell and doing all these great, amazing, fun things. I don't know. Maybe that's where we, it always feels easier putting the stories in another character. I think if you give yourself one layer of separation, I think you give yourself freedom to explore things in a way that's a lot more honest. I mean, I guess it takes a very enlightened, self-examined person, but it also feels a little narcissistic to just write about yourself.
And then, it's and at the same time, I feel like we're always writing about ourselves.
Yes.
And what level way to funnel writing about yourself through gods. I mean, that's cool. It's yeah, I don't I know that sounds
When you put it
probably
that way,
it
I'm
sounds
like, oh boy,
atrocious.
that's
No, it yeah, I didn't mean to put it that way, but
no.
it's also it's as right, and this is why I just adore novelists, because we go for the long haul, and also it's there's a soul enrichment to just the process and the writing part. Yeah, there's a book out, that's great, and it is great. Everyone should buy Hell or High Winter by Andrew Rubin. Yet we get to write them, so we actually have the transformation experience of the writing that I feel like read. I love people who just read. That's great. I won't even. I can't be friends with someone who doesn't read. It's like, what are you reading? And they're like, well, I listened to Harry Potter about 15 years ago, and I just like run out the door. I'm like, ooh, but I just like don't understand. But it's because I guess I need to try to understand life, and to understand life, I read novels. And it's whether it's classics or contemporary, I need to have them both going at once. Can I throw you a question? You're going to go, great, thanks for asking me that question and setting me up. What's one of your favorite classic novels? I told you.
Oh no, I should, because this is like
The problem with I know, now let me tell the listeners, the problem with this question is you're going to worry about what you're going to leave out, and when we're done, you're going to be like, I should have said blank.
I know that's, and I'm terrible with bar trivia, and I'm looking out at all these bookshelves full of books, and I'm like, I feel like I should get up and run and
Well,
like scan
just I
them.
just like just you know maybe one in your top 10 that kind of like lets this let lets it off the hook a little bit. It could be in your top 10
Well,
that what you're thinking of at the
I
moment.
mean, it's not a, I mean, define classics. Like, is it like modern
Well,
20th century classics or like
maybe I
going
should
back
let's
in?
not define
Yeah.
it. Let's just what did your consciousness bring to you that you went,
Just
you
in
know
this
what?
moment,
What's it called?
Slaughterhouse-Five. Slaughterhouse-Five.
Slaughterhouse-Five. Ooh,
That
that's a good
one, going
one.
back and rereading that one too, you find so many more elements
And
of
so
that
it
one.
goes.
Yes, so it goes, one of my favorite phrases in literature. You sort of have to embody that as a writer. That's what's so brilliant about it. Just this inevitability and just a letting go of the circumstances of the universe that are beyond you.
And what's
But
also, go ahead.
no, please go ahead.
Well, what's amazing about that is Kurt Vonnegut's writing about just the utter awfulness of Dresden and like bomb shelters, and then he brings a levity to it. And that is like that's what
That,
novels are for. That's what it that's
yeah,
what we're
I mean,
trying to still answer the questions that just have no answers.
that's, you just hit on why it's both horrendously dark, and it's someone's processing of tra their trauma in a massive way. And then you have Tralfamadorians, and you have this just like absolute silliness next to pure carnage and tragedy and the utmost destruction. And somehow it works, and it's beautiful, and it's strange, and it's powerful. And you remember it, and you go back to it. So that's the one classic that just popped into the top of my head.
And I have it on my shelf, and I haven't read it in probably at least a decade. So you're
No.
making me read it again. No, it's great. I can't wait to read it again because we just said so it goes, and I'm just like, oh God, I forgot so much of that novel. I got to get back in it.
I know I reread it a couple years ago, and yeah, I feel like it's time to reread it again. I rarely reread books, but that one I've gone back to.
Yeah, that's a good one. I wouldn't even mention any other books now because you've hit it
Good.
so high. It's almost like you
Oh,
wanna.
good. Thank you for
It's
taking me
almost,
off the hook, because
yeah. It's
doing
almost
two
no.
would be too hard.
It's almost like the dating apps. We're gonna bring it all around. It's almost like the dating
Oh.
apps where she said the exact type of best fry that she likes and where it's at. She answered your question, and then she said, "By the way, I have a question about you, fine young man. What is your experience with blank?" And that's and you're just like, "I think I found the unicorn."
Oh, if only. I'm waiting for that question to pop up in
Any
the chat.
question, any question.
Any question?
Just, what's your credit score? Thanks for asking. I look at it once a month.
Oh, God help us all. Hermes
Oh,
help us all.
yes. Hermes, help us
Help
all.
us.
The book is called Hell or High Winter. The author is Andrew Rubin. Andrew, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. This has been a blast. I don't know if your listeners learned anything other than which freeway exit to take, and maybe, well, I guess we sort of told them dating's hopeless, but you
Yeah,
know.
I don't want anyone to learn from this. What?
No.
That was a lot of fun. So we got ourselves ruined forever dating in Los Angeles again. The New York Times podcast host will never speak to me at parties or hire me, and there's a really good chance we've pissed off the gods, all the gods, in less than 1 hour. And you can too if you start your own show. Start date for the online screenwriting workshop during the holiday break is December 22nd. Go to drinkswithtony.com to find the registration link. When all spots are filled, the registration link will be removed. So remember, register soon because materials for your first assignment go out on December 19th, which is already next week for those of you listening this week. Now, if you're listening next week, well, it starts this week. So now you got to get with it. But if you're listening 2 weeks from now, it's too late and you can just Netflix and chill with yourself. It's all right. Yet, if you want to get that script ready for 2026, register now. Link at drinkswithtony.com. And if the link is still there, that means there are still seats available. Next week on the show, we have Cara Black. Always a pleasure to have fellow San Franciscan on the show, Cara Black. You may know her from her Paris crime books, the Amy DeLuke series, which I believe there are 22 novels at this point. But she's written a one-off that's coming out this month called Huguette, and we will be chatting about that next week. Keep reading, keep writing, sustain your soul. Find ways to counteract this world that's greedy for your eyeballs with short content spurts. Sit with a novel, write on your yellow pad, nourish your soul with long-form storytelling. It's the only way to fly. Thanks for listening and have a great week.